It's a Daily Talk Show, episode 412.
And it's Fat Fridays, and we got Andy White in the building. Hello.
Good morning.
Happy organized August.
Did you just make that shit up then?
No. I mean, it was actually 2 days ago that he made that shit up, and now we're amongst August.
Well, no, yesterday
Let's
was...
make a trend.
Well, yesterday was the first, and I did organized August, which was organizing my wallet. Mm. Which was great. But anyway, we won't get bogged down. But if you want to get involved and get organized in August.
Andy, I sent you a message last night and I said, what's your favorite food? I actually am meeting your text messages with how you present them, which are minimal, sometimes coded. Yeah. You once sent me a time code to our own podcast.
Yeah,
and I literally was like, Amy, this is fuck it. I got to work out what this is. Yeah. It's Seth Godin's episode, and Andy said 1401.
Well, I mean, Andy, you've got Melbourne Roubaix, and so it's almost like orienteering through text message sometimes.
Yeah,
the way that
it is. Well, it depends. When we become better friends, Tommy, my text message will become longer, more explicit.
It's really just short form novel.
It's a level of our friendship, but I feel that we could go from strength to strength.
I mean, I feel like we've taken that next step in our relationship. You've let me wear your helmet.
Well, you did take it off my head.
Yeah.
You won't let me do it.
I'm going to take it off.
Folliculitis.
Look at that thing.
It's safety and warmth first, always.
So
always.
Is it actually a snowboard helmet?
It is a snowboard helmet. It does not meet Australian safety standards for a bicycle because they haven't played the licensing. But other than that, I'm sure it's fine.
Mate, I would trust my helmet, my head in this over a fucking Melbourne $10 helmet from 7-Eleven that you can get.
Yeah, anyway, I agree. I would never compromise my safety.
All right, I'm back.
And so do you reckon it is actually...
There we go.
I mean, what is it designed for? What are people using
that? Keeping your head warm. Well, like snowboarding impacts, I imagine. You don't want to... We should ask the Canadian, really.
Yeah, when would you
I've
use
it? I've never actually snowboarded, but I've had...
What? Get out!
I've had friends that have been in snowboarding accidents, and it's... Because you're hitting the snow, you risk hitting ice.
Yes.
Mm. Sure.
You can hit ice, a tree, rocks.
Oh, trees.
And when you're going down a hill at like... Sometimes you get 80 k's an hour. It's not ideal.
So that would be highly safe then for a bike riding.
Exactly.
We got to address the elephant in the room.
Which one?
The spread that's in front of us.
You did sort of.
Oh, no, mate. No, you just.
Yeah. You look like you're pointing to me.
Yeah. We've got an amazing spread, 3D deal. Do you want to just share with Andy how you've come across this morning?
So this morning I went out to Queen Victoria Market. Went on a nice early morning walk and just picked up a bunch of Italian themed foods and stuff like meats, spreads. We've got three different types of dips, olives, two different types of breads, three different types of cheese, two variations of salami.
Can you not?
Ciabatta.
And they actually, the people at the, I can't remember the name of the...
What, the opportunity to
really,
plug?
They gave us a deal. You literally said that they were going to be... But the idea of a deal is you got to know where the fuck you got it from.
Andy, this is actually something... What do you feel about going to somewhere like the Vic Market in a place like Melbourne, Australia, and actually trying to barter with these, delicatessens?
I think food's one of those things... bartering, can I pay less for that? I come from a long line of hagglers. Yeah. My brother is probably one of Australia's greatest negotiators when it comes to folded. But the food, I suppose if you're going to buy 100 kilos of cured meat, I would probably say, can you do something less for cash, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, McDonald's.
Well, he asked for a discount.
Oh.
I didn't ask for a discount. I said, this is going to be for a podcast. We're going to be filming it.
Oh, he's flexing.
Gave the guy a sticker.
Oh, mate, in lieu of the old influencer whole, asking for a cop-out because you're in a basically, look, let's just say, I have a small Instagram or social media following. I would never ask for a cop out and say, post, can you give me a half price rent on this? And
I'm glad that he's forgot the name of it because we can't be linked back really to it.
Yes. But everyone, to be fair, I never asked for the discount. He said, if you want three, for the dips per se, said, if you want three, I'll give you three for $10.
I think that's standard.
That's a standard deal.
Yeah, upsold deal. Yeah. That's it's the reverse. You make them feel like you're getting a discount, but you're actually selling them more.
$5 each for those dips.
How long has a Canadian been in Australia?
Like three months.
Oh, yeah. So my wife's been in Australia 10 years, and she's finally, now she's coming out with some Australianisms, and she's getting a hang of the lay of the land,
how
things are dealt. Mm-hmm. She's a very crossing the T's, dotting the I's, which I love about her and is very important in a dynamic where I'm very far at the other end of the scale. So I think we can forgive Dill.
Because look at the spread.
Oh, no, he's done a great job.
Yeah, the other thing too is money.
When you have a podcast, it just does come up in conversation. It's one of those things. It's one of those things, I think, where it's like, don't you think? Oh, no.
Well, I mean, you lead with it.
Well, I mean, it's all I've got.
I'm Josh Jensen, host of the Daily Talk Show podcast.
It's all I've got.
Andy, you've got something. You've created a movement. We shot a video for Quadlock that was about you and the Melbourne Roubaix, the event that you put on every year.
It's bloody awesome, I just say.
Thank you. And we had no real idea about
$2 in the swear jar.
Melbourne Roubaix or what it is or the movement that it is. And we filmed the interview first, maybe 2 months before the event. Right. And so we're leading up. So we didn't really have an idea. And then we get there, 3D Deal, Josh and I, we get there on the day and we're just, what the fuck is happening? We can swear on
this. I'd say that the same on the day.
We just literally had to point that. I mean, the thing with a video like this is you literally point the camera anywhere and there's something interesting fucking going on.
It's wild. And it was wild the first year when we had 100 people. I remember the night before I was on the SEN radio with Matthew Keenan and Dave McKenzie, who now SBS Cycling Tour de France commentators. And I was saying, look, I don't know how many people are going to turn up. Maybe, spitballing. Oh, imagine if 100 turn up. And they said, we think 100 people are going to turn up. I'm like, I don't know. And 100 people turned up. I was blown away at the response. But one, I think it's one of those things, if you build it, they will come. People are looking for a reason to get together and have a great time. But
it was pre-social media then, pre-Insta.
Back in the day, I printed out flyers and I would go around to cafes and bike shops and say, do you mind if I put this up in your window? If they said no, I'd just put it up anyway.
And any tips on that stuff? So I did a sticker bomb. I don't know how you feel about sticker bombing.
Sticker bombs, it's like an earlier version of hashtagging, really. It's a physical in real life version of hashtagging. Like you put on a sign, it's a hope to get people's attention when they're actually doing something totally different.
Yeah, but my concern is that I walked the other day and I'm guessing it's the council has gone through and removed all the stickers.
Or it's a little nasty other podcast.
I don't know, but I'm curious as to what is the standard protocol of sticker bombing. I feel like you would know.
Oh, where?
Because I put it on a
Mercedes-Benz.
I put it on a
pole where you press the button to cross the road.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, and it was gone.
Are we talking about like 5 foot height?
Well, this is a problem because I'm always fucking panicked when I'm doing it. They're always in the worst position.
Wrong. You need to look like it's totally legitimate.
Yeah.
And you were there. You were just actually paid to work for the Daily Talk Show. This is just my job. Hey, don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Do I need high vis, maybe?
I'm not going to talk about my experience with high vis.
What is your experience with high vis?
You can do anything with high vis.
What have you done with high
vis? I'm not going to say. Well, I mean, you talk about the origins of street art and graffiti, and I know a lot of artists that, I mean, Melbourne, we have this hypocrisy where one of the most celebrated points where tourists come to take photos is Hosier Lane.
Yeah.
Now, it's graffiti. It's vandalism.
Yeah.
But at what point does that vandalism become art and cherished?
Yeah. Well, I think the stickers.
Well, the stickers. At what point does it, like, is someone going to put something around that sticker? The first one. Yeah. Where was the first one
placed? Yeah, exactly.
Perfect example. I think it's in between San Francisco and Los Angeles. There's some laneway that is now Bubblegum Alley. And it's been
Chewies.
Look it up. It's amazing. Right. Just
sounds like the Lovelock Bridge in Paris.
Yeah. So like, who was the first person to stick a piece of Chewy there? They were just being a gronk, and then
put it there,
and then just littered. It's colourful, and people take photos there.
Do you think that the councils, like Melbourne, on South Bank, they've actually got one of those bridges now that have the cable that allows for it?
I don't know if it allows for it.
Are they trying to make it a thing? No.
No, because they had to, what Andy's saying, that bridge in Paris.
They have to remove it every fucking 6 months.
They had to remove all the locks.
It's the weight.
So all the gypsies are selling locks over in Paris, trying to get you to go and do it.
Yeah.
So Melbourne-Roubaix, it's not a race.
God, no.
It was a race.
Can we start picking at this, by the way?
Oh, yeah, go for it. Manja.
And I just decided I can see. Look, one thing I'll say about, I used to race a lot. I used to enjoy it. Races involve ego. Mm. And it's amazing. Once you take out ego from an event, the vibe changes drastically. And I found that from my own experiences of going to bike races, when everyone's trying to win, one, there's only one person happy at the end of the day, and that's the person win. Everyone else is less than happy. And just the encouragement and the vibe when you can't compete and flex in a physical manner, and I just found it was definitely a light bulb moment of making putting the bucket of water over the fire of competing physically. Because the other thing is, there's so many opportunities in life to do that. Mm. There's not so many opportunities to just be silly, cavalier, and hang out.
Yeah, there was people dressed up. These dudes had built this, like this platform with the
Mardi Gras float, self-propelled.
With these exercise bikes
stationary bikes that were then connected to actual wheels that could make it move.
And we followed them for the whole day. Somehow we just ended up bumping into them at all points.
Well, they don't go very fast.
Yeah, they were going at a great pace.
There was a wheel hanging off on the back, and I thought, is that part of the aesthetic? And they said, no, that's a spare wheel for if and when one breaks. So
at the start of the race, they said to us, we don't know if we'll make it.
You said race.
Oh, sorry. At the start of the event. At the start of the event, they said, we don't know if we'll make it.
It's genuine. And so last year, Oscar made a bicycle with a trailer and the barbecue on the back and did it up as a moving Bunnings snag station and was serving snags. And I thought, there's no way I can top that.
Yeah.
No way. And then they do. So I love that people, and because we reward it, and people do it, I think they do it just for the fun and for the visual and to entertain others, but we've also given prizes away. Mm. But every year I think people are thinking, how can I stand out and be silly and fun? And I love that that's a distraction from the day-to-day of the monotony of a lot of our lives is something to think, what can I do for that big party that happens in the middle of winter?
I always see some people who have found success in something. And you've definitely found success in this being this huge event, not race, event now. Do you look back on it with a story that you articulate that's about, you know, getting into it and you had the vision of exactly what you wanted? Or is it what I more think about looking back on success is you kind of just in the moment, not you're hoping it sort of takes off. Did you have the vision at the start, started?
I can't look past next week. I'm terrible. And actually, I had my wife and I had our, because we worked together. Part of our success is purely because she keeps me on track and she has a better plan. But I hate to plan. And we were talking about, you know, planning for Fixo, and it's like a, I don't know, boner killer. Like, I just don't like the plan. I like my agility of the first one was just like, I'll just put it on an event and let's see what happens.
So what is Roubaix? What does Roubaix actually mean?
So Roubaix is the town, the city in the north of France, which Paris-Roubaix, of which our event takes the piss of, it is based on. So it's a serious event. It's the longest and oldest bicycle race in the world, Paris-Roubaix. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't actually start in Paris now, Paris. It starts in Compiègne, but it still rides over rough cobbled farm roads, which is unchanged. And that's part of the unique aesthetic of that race. It makes it really tough and grueling.
Is it like cyclocross? Is that a thing? I don't know much about cycling.
It's just like a regular
bicycle Tour
race.
De France or whatever? Is it the exact same sort of thing?
Yeah, and they've had stages where they've gone over the same roads.
That sounds so fucking bogan when I said that. No. Tour de France.
No, that's fine. Hey, did you see the guy who jumped on a dirt jump bike?
It's like the third time, yeah.
Jumped over the road as the cyclists on the Tour de France were going underneath. It's so epic.
Crazy.
It's this epic. Look it up on YouTube.
So the cobblestones, the roughness of that ride.
And the only reason that Melbourne Roubaix came is because this city, the majority of the back alleys in the inner suburbs had a cobblestone back alley, which was originally used for the shit carters to come and collect, you know, the rubbish and the trash and et cetera to clear the streets. And in planning the event, when I'm looking at doing, everyone's like, oh, where's it going to go next year? And you find new sectors. It's really depressing when I go somewhere and you're expecting to see a cobbled alley and they've paved over it.
Mm.
It's like...
Well, Albert Park, I used to live there. And
it's oldest.
All the sort of behind the houses, they're old cobblestone laneways. And it's so nice. It's cool. Like,
it's an aesthetic that it's hard to create and easy to pave over. It's like that, you know, is it paved paradise to put up a parking lot? Oh, line in the song.
It's a good song.
It is a good song. But it's
I'll put it in my Spotify playlist. One of the organized August is creating a fresh Spotify playlist, so I'll add that song.
We can never go back to that visual of the beautiful buildings that are easily torn down and thrown up a townhouse, multi-story, et cetera. So,
did you grow up in Melbourne?
I did. Born and bred, northern suburbs. We've got our first house now and it's very close to where I grew up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always home, but you've travelled the world. You've lived all across the world.
Yeah.
You quit your marketing job.
Yeah, much disappointment of my dad. I actually have I'm going to share this on my Fixo account, but I shared a photo of me in my office at Hewlett-Packard, my marketing job that I quit.
Oh, wow.
Was very disappointed.
God, what kind of computers were they rocking back then?
Was it printers then?
This was just pre-Millennium Bug, if you you can imagine. You know, the world was about to end. What are we going to do when the calendars roll over, et cetera?
So were you almost – did the Millennium Bug come into your decision of quitting?
No.
Okay.
No. It was the monotony and just working with the dickheads.
So what do you do? Like, if you're working at HP – marketing in the 90s. What is that actually? What does that look like?
I was organizing the promotional giveaways for the company. So I would have all these reps come and basically what you would go to AliExpress now and when you find stuff that you want to get branded, you'd have reps come to you and say, oh, here's some pens and we've got some water bottles and all this just garbage and we'll just throw the HP logo on it and then other groups within the organization could buy it and they sent me cost centers. It was just boring as hell.
How long did you do that for?
I don't think I lasted a year.
So you did your marketing degree and then got your job.
And then I threw it in the bin.
I'm going overseas.
And so there's Melbourne, Roubaix, but then all the other 364 days of the year, Fixo. How do you describe Fixo? Because from my perspective, it's one of those like lifestyle brands that sort of you don't necessarily the first thing you do isn't necessarily put a product to the name. I think I put you to the name.
This was a discussion Melody and I were having. She was like, okay, we could have a plan and we could sell it. And I'm like, can't sell it. It's me.
Yeah.
And there's lots of great examples of brands where a personality is intrinsically weaved into that brand. And look, it's not my goal. It's never been my goal to build it up and sell it. And if people that have known Fixo or me over the journey of what I've been doing will see that it's evolved. Like I've grown up, I'm marginally more sensible. I'm a dad now. Mm-hmm. That's really exciting.
Yeah, and I can tell with the helmet, mate.
Yeah.
That's got dad vibes all over it. And that's why I gravitate. Cool dad. Let me put it on.
Cool dad vibes.
And now a big thing is creating, and Melbourne Roubaix, as you would have seen, is creating an event where parents can hang out with their kids and do super cool stuff with their kids and share a moment that their kids can enjoy, the parents can enjoy, gets people together. I love that. And I want to share my passion with my daughter. And look, Fixo is related to bikes, but it's really just an expression of my own personality and what I like doing, being outside, having fun, talking shit, and making people feel really good.
Josh informed me about the wombat.
Yeah, I keep seeing the wombat on your Instagram.
Oh, we've got a wombat living at our house. We've been treating it for mange and he's decided to take residence.
In a hole? Or
and right next to our bedroom window. Between a rock. Yeah.
Because I was like, fuck, I'd love to, because 3D Dill, we've sort of done the rounds. We went to Listerfield, like Churchill National Park, and we went and saw kangaroos and all that sort of thing. I thought, like you were actually patting Like you actually touch the wombat.
Mm.
Like
yeah, my daughter's patted a wombat, echidnas, the tiger snake. She's seen a tiger snake. Like she basically walked over it. I mean, that wasn't a highlight of parenting.
Don't pat
that
it. Wasn't. If you see a tiger snake, fucking run.
I'm aware.
Like
that.
I said, I basically live where I grew up, and at my front door, it's the wilderness area, and we have deer, we have eagles. I love, and that's one of the things I love sharing with my daughter. We go for a walk, see some wombats, see echidnas. Mm. You know, it's a really special thing. I love that, and I love. Because I have a global audience, I love sharing that because people on the other side of the world, kangaroo's no big it's no big deal for me, but sometimes you think, well, what about the people in Russia? Mm. I reckon they would trip out seeing
absolutely
the stuff that I see and take for granted every day. What so I don't take it for granted.
What is it about cycling and really strong, solid communities? Because we're friendly with Maven, Cycling Maven, who's built a good thing online through cycling and the
people. Look at Quadlock and all these different brands and people that have, it's definitely it feels like that community built.
Sometimes
community
I think, is it because we're outcasts and we've chosen a transportation alternative that doesn't fit the norm of, I think there is a part of it. Mm. I think it's people that like being outdoors, like being active. I think there's a lot of commonalities about what brings people and bikes together. I don't know. It's not just one thing because when we say bikes, there's people that only ride road bikes. There's people that only ride mountain bikes. There's people who just use a bike just to get to work and back. And outside of that, they don't ride a bike.
Yeah. So do you feel like you sit in the middle if there's all those communities? I think Melbourne Roubaix has sort of put you in that position.
It's definitely – well, I was a bike courier, so I was using it – I loved riding bikes and I was using it as a tool – and that helped me meet lots of people that use bikes in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And you're right, Melbourne Roubaix is one of those events that pulls together all people that ride bikes, but it's not for one subset. Mm-hmm. So,
have you seen I think it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the bike courier?
Right. So my friend Austin Horse is the stunt double.
Oh wow! Yeah,
and my other friend Kevin or Squid, as you know, and he's a bit of a godfather type. In New York Messenger Center, because I worked in New York, he was the creative consultant, I would say, to get the look right. And it was one of those movies that bike crews would look at and go, you would never do that. And, not so much. It's actually pretty good representation, but there has been a lot of movies of Quicksilver, for example, where they're switching between scenes and 1 second they're in San Francisco and then they're in New York. But you've got to be a total nerd to pick up on those little things. As a movie watcher, you wouldn't.
Well, I definitely – that's why I was wanting to know, is it a genuine representation of what it was like? Because you worked in New
York.
Well, you did 3 months in New York,
So the reason I went to Canada, I got a working visa for Canada because I knew I would never get a work visa for the States. Yeah. And I just ducked across the border. I worked illegally for 3 months.
I may have defamed you, on yesterday's show because I switched two stories up where TJ's mate.
You got it right.
Did you work illegally in New York? Are you saying that?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah,
all
right. Yeah. No, you got it right because I know another guy that went there and worked.
Was an alien in New York, so I just didn't.
Year? 80s? 90s.
But can you go to fucking US? Like, is there a concern?
Could I go there now and do it? Absolutely. No,
you could do it.
Absolutely. Do it tomorrow.
Do you think there'd be any
family here?
From a customs, he's got the wombat.
From a customs point of view, do you reckon that fucking. They're not.
Well. I mean, when you enter the States, I hope the NSA isn't watching this. Well, maybe that'd be good for ratings, right?
Yeah.
When you enter any country, you say, why am I here? I'm here as a tourist.
Yeah, sure.
I was basically, and in the grand scheme of things, the pittance that I was making, I was a tourist with the coolest mechanism to see New York inside and out.
Yeah.
Really, that's what I was doing. I was sleeping on couch at 13 Division above a Chinese restaurant, making deliveries during the day. At night, I would deliver food, which I thought would never catch on in Australia.
Mm-hmm. And so it was like, this is Uber Eats back in.
I was an Uber Eats. Absolutely. It was one of the best jobs I had in New York.
What kind of food? Yeah. Chinese food?
It was Mama's. So it was really good restaurant in the East Village. It was really wholesome pastas and what else do they do? Just really home style, good Italian style cooking.
Lasagna.
What were the companies that you were working for?
One was called A to Z, affectionately known as Gay to Z because the owners were gay. and
no better place, New York,
smoke
baby.
Crack in the basement. Really? It was wild. And my friend Macca, who's a world-renowned artist, mm-hmm. got me the job. And this is one of the things that he taught me. He's a mega hustler, mm-hmm. but it's who you know. Yeah. And he basically said to the dispatcher, this is my mate Andy from Australia, give him a job.
They don't ask questions. They just, it was all
said,
cash?
Is he fast? He goes, he's fast.
What he's sort fast. Of bike? Is it like, I'm imagining that, some form of like BMX or some
doesn't
shit.
Matter what you ride. Really? And honestly, the best thing you can offer any company as a bike courier is just turn up every day and just shut your mouth and do what you're told.
How do you see, because you've had those experiences, when you see what's happening with Uber Eats and you see all that sort of stuff, what do you empathize or do you see it as a different time? Have they bastardized the whole experience?
I think they've marginal. Like, it doesn't sound like they're making very good much money, but what
the restaurants aren't anyway, from what I've
but
read.
The early days of there were some companies in San Francisco building their own version of Uber to deliver to clients.
Yeah.
So it's the origins are quite not old, but I think Uber has branded and packaged it the best of all of them.
There's another brand, E, starts with E, Yellow. There was a flock of them at Melbourne Roubaix.
Yeah, and all those food delivery there, Uber, I think so, Eats. Look, that's all. It's like there's Ola, there's a rideshare app.
Yeah.
Now it's becoming a competitive space, but Uber just led the way. Mm. Back to your question, do I think, like, Uber's got an opportunity to connect more people with the people delivering it. So in a way, there's more opportunity. Mm-hmm. I just think the days of it being able to make heaps of money and the early days of the 90s when people pre-faxes and emails and more things were delivered, bike couriers made solid bank. Mm. And same with in New York. Like, you could make good money. When I worked in New York, I primarily delivered garments and portfolios, photography portfolios for agencies, to photography studios and garments. So
you were doing Dropbox, really? Like,
yeah, you know, it's true. It's so Dropbox has alleviated the need for those. And I remember I delivered to the West Village once, and over my shoulder I saw a guy with massive camera lens, and he's all dressed in black. And I looked over my shoulder after delivered, before I delivered, I said to him, "Hey, what's your problem?
Yeah,
I'm not that good looking." He said, "Oh, that's Sarah Jessica Parker's house." I'm like, "Bullshit." He goes, "Check the bag." And it was a bag from Oscar De La Renta, and on the bag it said SJP. I'm like, probably is her house. And I delivered to, you know, celebs all the time. Yeah. They're people. They just live in New York.
Do you can't become friends with any of them?
No.
Or just knuckle buddies?
No.
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 Well, you had walking.
You're still on one message text.
Yeah, exactly. Delivered.
Delivered. With a time code.
The walkie-talkie. I love walkie-talkie.
Yeah, so that was the Nextel era. Yeah. Of.
And so what years were you there? Were you there pre-9/11? Like, what was
post-9/11. So I started as a bike courier a month after 9/11 in London, and that was the walkie-talkie area. And when I worked in New York, it was Nextel. So it's one way. You don't have an open channel. The thing that and when I worked in Melbourne, we had open channel walkie-talkies, which was just the biggest hilarity every day because everyone had their own personalities. You would call over the radio. If someone would fuck up, my thing was the Muttley, like, like. And just the banter was amazing. And
it's like a podcast. So, you could have fucking, if you recorded the walkie talk, like CB radios back in the day, I'd spend hours just listening to people having conversations.
One of my mate, Alvaro, 5 o'clock, like on the dot. Oh, he would say, it's just about time for burgers because he would be in South Melbourne. It's 5 o'clock, time for burgers. And people would just cue in visuals from what's going on in the street. But once that's taken away, so you've got your job where you're in isolation, but you don't feel it because you've got all these voices.
Yeah.
So
the community.
Community. People would call on, some people would call on with a song in the morning. So Kirk was the Bee Gees, Staying Alive. So you'd be in an elevator and all of a sudden the Bee Gees would start playing. I loved that. That was a really special time. But once, so we're talking now to Uber, there's none of that. It's lifeless.
Could Uber maybe manufacture some of that shit? I wonder.
I don't think it's scalable. Like it's too disruptive. Think about the executive that would be pissed now if he heard that from Uber, and then it's this big company. It's like
the romanticism has died.
Yeah. I mean, that's. I think you do that so well. I think of like Australiana and nostalgia and romanticism. Like I feel these are the things that I associate with you. When it comes to Australiana, what do you think that people miss? Like I find it hard to describe Australia to international people, but what do you love about Australia?
Oh, I love the open spaces. I love the wildlife. I love. I think we still have a relatively laid back nature, but one of the things. I mean, I'm obviously a big part of my job is living online, and I don't like the way the portal that we all looking is homogenizing the world. Mm-hmm. So you go overseas and you're like, oh, I've got that back home. Mm. There's less of a, when I traveled South America in the early 2000s and other parts of the world that weren't exposed to that, you really get a sense that it's a different way of life. Mm-hmm. But I think as this technology evolves, we're all kind of becoming less diverse in our cultural way of life.
So you're not a guy to go to a restaurant but have already gone through Instagram looking at the meals that you
I like I don't want to know. I want surprise. That's one of the things about what I was saying with our event is there's very few opportunities to have total surprise. Like Google Street View has mapped the world. If I want to know what your joint looks like, I can put in your address and I can do that for the Grand Canyon, which is one of my favorite places in the world.
You don't have to go there anymore. You got Street View.
I was in a building in India. They've sent a guy Google. With a pack, and I was like literally walking through the building. It was like abandoned. It was crazy.
I mean, what's it? So there's benefits to it.
There are benefits.
It gets people curious.
To talk about that, India, you don't have the smells. You don't have the oral sensations. It is a visual cue to what it might be like, but it's not the same. It's not the same. And I think to come back to your question, what do I love about Australia? Wombats.
They're creepy creatures, man. I was on school camp once and I just heard this and this thing, this heavy beast, 60 kgs or something, ran past me.
And they're fast.
I was scared.
Fallacy that they're slow.
Is it?
They've got little teeth.
Can you bite? Yeah, you can.
Yeah, but would you bite? Would you? So like patting it's one thing, lifting, you would never lift it up, obviously.
Well, it's a wild animal, I think if it was domesticated, you totally could. I've seen ones that are like little dogs and they run around.
They're all cute when they're young.
I guess domesticated animals, do you have any pets?
Yeah, I got a dog. Yep.
Yeah.
I always had a dog.
I wonder what the, like wombats.
The law?
Well, not the laws, you're not allowed to.
Not allowed to domesticate.
No, actually, so I joked about with this, the ranger, how we've got a wombat that wants to adopt us as pets.
Yeah. Never joked with the rangers.
That's so true, right? And I said, it's got my, you should contact Wildlife Vic and help about that. I said, well, actually, we are training it for mange at the moment. And like, obviously, the sarcasm didn't come through. Absolutely. My little longer text, because I actually know this ranger really well.
Fuck. What did he do? What did he do to get in the long text range?
Yeah, and I actually thought for a while having a fox as a pet would be amazing. Oh. I'm torn. I love foxes. Obviously, I don't like what they do to native wildlife, but then I bring it back to think, what is the most invasive, detrimental thing that Australia has ever introduced?
Mm-hmm. Frogs?
White people.
White people. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Right,
they beat foxes.
Let's just think about it. Like on a high level, you know, people,
we fuck shit up.
Correct. Yeah. And it is the biggest tragedy. So I think some people get on their high horse about deer is an invasive species. And I love deer.
So you think we should maybe just open it up a bit more?
I don't know what the answer is, but I think people just need to have a good look hard in the mirror and go, actually, what are the bigger things that we can actually stop and change?
What's your view on conservation? Because you talk about, say, like the cobblestones or things like that. Are you constantly... Because I've got to say, I don't have my nostalgia meter goes to things like fucking Nickelodeon or stuff like that.
No, it doesn't go to like milk bars.
Definitely milk bars and stuff like that. But I don't, maybe architecture isn't necessarily super high on the list. But as I get older, I start to appreciate, when you go to other places, you go to Europe and all that sort of shit, you're like, oh, why the fuck are we getting rid of all these things?
Well, what you bring up a good point, and I think it's unusual for younger people to have that appreciation of architecture and cultural things, values to preserve, until they get to their 30s and their 40s. And like, hang on, We should really predict, because my youth is, or reminders to my youth are getting raised.
Yeah.
And but it's too late, right? Because you're right, there was something about the old corner milk bars dying. Well, you can see why, because everyone goes to Coles.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, also, 7-Eleven. We're in the fucking I Quit Sugar era. It's like you can't fucking have green frogs anymore. You know,
I stopped going.
Do you remember the time they could just have green frogs, guilt free, licorice, guilt free, without fucking
with
looking
the red
at the back
tip, with the red tip on them?
Absolutely, fireworks. TJ had a few.
Yeah, but
hookups
you'd have some red. You'd probably ride your bike to the shop to get your bag of in the white paper bag, and you get your like a dollar of mixed lollies or your frogs, whatever your favorite was. And then you'd go hang out with your mates and you'd run around after school. Mm. Whereas kids now, they're having those frogs and then they're looking at their phone. Yeah, and
they're Uber-eating the frogs.
Probably.
One of the weirdest things, I got home the other night and my wife had ordered Uber Eats and she says to me, oh, there's some left in the fridge. I said, what'd you get? I got arancini balls and chicken wings. I was like, what?
A weird combo.
What a weird.
So you can get it. Is it basically just Uber Eats is just someone who goes out and get anything for you? Is it?
No, well, I mean, this was from a place. So this specifically, there restaurant. Is those services. But you can, there's like, they've set
Do you
up
not
like
use
little
Uber Eats?
No.
This is good.
I've used Uber twice, once in Canada, and I actually used it recently when I had to go have my hernia op because I thought, okay, I'll take the train in. But the train line was under construction. I'm like, okay, what else to do? Could I drive in? And so I just thought, oh, no, I'll just get an Uber because I had to get at 4:30 in the morning to get to the hospital for like 5:30. Yeah. I'll just get an Uber. And it was amazing. It is a fantastic service. Mm-hmm. I can see
what was
why
the banter like in the Uber? Oh, like, what did
zero.
You talk about?
No, I didn't look for it. You know, Ravi was the guy's name. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go that, oh, so how long have you been doing this? It's
so like, you don't even write Uber, but you know, fucking know the
I
script.
Said, no, I said to the guy, I said, mate, you can put on whatever you want to listen. Yeah. I'm just going to just zone out in the back.
Yeah.
You're got preparing there. For an operation as well, which is a whole other thing.
It seems like you've done a bunch of stuff in life that – you're not looking for the financial reward. It's the experience that you're being rewarded with.
I think
with.
I've always been chasing experiences and things that or, for example, when I was in London, I was on the corner of Regent Street and I forget where the alley was, but I was talking to this guy called Robin Superkid and he told me about how he'd worked in New York. And well, Superkid was his nickname, okay, Robin. Yeah. And you worked in New York? He's like, oh, yeah, just went over there, got a job, da 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 da. I'm like, and that blew my mind. Mm. And then I thought, hang on, I'm an Australian. I'm in London. I'm working as a biker. How hard can it be? I've done this before in London. New York is just another place to do it. Mm. And I was – and a few things I thought, I never want to be that granddad that – I want to have real life experiences. Say, when I was a kid, this is what I did. I didn't like. I don't want to have regrets about. Oh, I wish I'd. I just don't want to regret something because I chased some meaningless kind of job that paid better. And I'm like, I'm sure I could get a job paying better.
And so that's how you're gonna. You've got a young daughter.
Yep.
Is that something? Because I mean, your parents, like you said, you quit your marketing job, and they were like, oh shit. You know, there's
a
anxiety.
Massive argument about it. Yeah. I remember crying.
Well, last time I quit my job to go full-time working for myself, I called my mum and said, I've quit my job and I'm starting my own thing.
I could imagine the excitement in your voice.
Yeah, I was very excited. She goes, oh, well, this is something I don't want to hear. It's fucking hung up.
Do you know, look, I think part of that stems from a parent's wanting to have their child have security and the best for them.
Yeah.
And my parents had a very different path. And set up a wonderful foundation for my brother and I, but we are unemployable, is what my dad calls us. But you know, we have made our way, and I'm thinking, when my daughter, she will challenge me and she'll say something, and I've just got to think, you know what, you'll work it out. You'll work it out. We all work it out. Yeah. Look at you guys. Yeah. You're working it out. Mm. I'm working it on the fly, as a lot of people do, and that's really exciting. We all kind of work it out. Mm. You know, maybe if they were going seriously off course, or you were pissing all your money up your nose, or da 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 da,
then I don't know why he looked at me when he's like, it's got well, nothing. There's nothing there.
Have you seen the spread? We haven't fucking eaten it yet.
No, I think, you know, and it's very difficult for parents to imagine walking a life different to your own.
So how do you take that on? If you've got parents or family that you find aren't supportive in that moment, how do you reconcile it? What's the, I'm curious.
Well, I just did what I wanted anyway.
Yeah.
Mm. And my brother's the same. I wasn't doing anything reckless.
Mm. But that's the thing, right? But if you're not feeling, if you believe in your heart that you want to do something, but then you also feel like you don't have the support of the people who should be supporting, that's got to, like, I know personally it takes a toll where I'm like, oh, I haven't felt supported on certain things. And people can say, oh, the bigger picture, their family or whatever. But it's also like, oh, am I going to be a better person? Am I going to be better if I just like let it go and allow it to sort of happen? And and how do you reconcile all that?
I suppose I'm lucky. Like, I knew my parents would get on board. They would have to get on board. I just would have preferred if they were more excited. Like your mum, you were excited about doing something adventurous with your life. And like my mum in her 20s, she traveled around the world with a little Leica camera with her brother, and she had her own version of that. And I was looking to do my own version. Yeah. I think it's just coming from a place of love, of wanting your kids to be safe, knowing where they are at all times. The other thing is, I remember this thing. I said, I'm going to South America. And my mum's like, oh, it's very, very, very dangerous there. And why don't you go to America? And so the most dangerous things, I remember the first night I got on a bus in Seattle, and I had these two guys fighting with knives, and they almost fell on top of me. And it's this perception of one parts of the world is dangerous and one isn't. And I found that in Colombia, a wonderful place, very dangerous if you want to find trouble. But you know where I reckon the most dangerous place is, other than the road?
Abbotsford.
Yeah, Victoria Street.
The Daily Talk Show office. Yeah.
Oh, well, I was going to say King Street at 1 o'clock at night. Like central, like Melbourne, like it's wild. Yeah. And like, well, you guys can obviously relate to inner city Melbourne. You know, if you want to find trouble, it's right here.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things that as we get further away from our home base, people think, oh, it's dangerous because we don't have a way of easily relating to it.
For someone who has a similar approach, I don't want to plan, you know, I want to find experience, which doesn't always equate to stability. What do you, I mean, you're someone who I think has found a level of success in that, which is probably not as common as what most people would experience.
You've got a consistent event that you've been doing for, how many years is it now?
14.
14
which
years.
I do say to Melody, I'm like, I'm very grateful. We've worked at it, but the events come and go.
Yeah.
My brother said to me, remember summer days?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, like that events come and go. It was huge. And if you look at a bell curve, a lot of these things, they go 1, 2, 3, peak, and then bam. Like, so I'm very grateful to be doing and working for myself effectively for this long.
But what about someone who's not finding the success? What do you think in terms of what would you say to somebody who's doing a creative endeavor or, you know, trying to chase something that doesn't make that much sense?
What would I say?
What have you said to yourself?
If they don't have that, a yearly event, I guess.
Have the success yet, because I think, you know, you can be doing something, a grind for 4 or 5 years before it actually
worked. Well, can
worked.
I just say, before my wife officially became involved with Melbourne Bay, I didn't make anything. It was not, it was successful in terms of people had a good time, but it was not slick to the level that you guys are seeing it now. Certainly it wasn't financially viable. It was just a thing that I did, and I had a very expensive hobby before my wife came involved. And she left her job working in corporate Melbourne and decided to focus to work with me, and that was a real turning point. And that's the point where we started to sell more things online. Customers, like, I was just terrible at customer service. Just timeliness, where she came from a background in retail, timeliness, good attention to detail, strict processes, protocols and things like that. And that's why I think Fixo works, because it's that marrying of our two skill sets.
Mm. People. It's people. Yeah. Right?
Have you gotten better at those things, or has your wife just sort of taken
I definitely got better at those things. Yeah.
I think it's by osmosis, right? Yeah. It's going to happen. Josh has got strengths that I don't, and I'm picking up on those things and learning from him, and he's vice versa. And I think within that, what you said is you can think doing it alone is like, oh, I've got to. No one understands my shit. Mm. And it's hard to find that person, right? Like this is your wife who you trust.
It would be very hard to find someone to employ, to have that level of trust. And, if it wasn't, or just going through LinkedIn or whatever, how people recruit these days. Malcolm Gladwell's or ZipRecruiter. There you go. Malcolm.
Our first podcast integration.
Malcolm's a quirk.
Yeah. The ZipRecruiters, they're doing a lot of advertising.
Well,
in Melbourne, I feel like you're also got that sort of good local knowledge. Like I grew up in Endeavour Hills and stuff like that.
Knowledge of it.
I'm curious. I feel like you know a lot about also like the north or whatever, but also like inner city and all that sort of thing. What are some of those local knowledge things, whether it's places to eat or rules to live by if you're to spend some time in Melbourne?
It used to be a lot better. And one of the things, like I was saying about when I worked in New York and San Francisco, I was working, but really I was getting to know an intimate level of detail of the city, the buildings, the people, where to eat, areas and districts, and where was dodgy, where was not. And in Melbourne, it's changed a lot because I was a biker in, you know, the mid-thousands. Now I live in the burbs and I focus a lot on living out there and doing my thing out there. I'm amazed at how rapidly Melbourne is just changing, particularly Docklands, inner city, and the vibe is – it's still a big country town. I love that about Melbourne. It kids itself that it's a big city. But I think we should try and just stay true to who we are and not try and be a global or massive city. I love that because part of – that's my phone.
Oh, that's okay.
Reminder, just chuck
it
off.
I'll get it.
I would say just walk around. And that's the thing I loved about bicycles. When you see the world by bicycle, it's a certain speed.
Yeah.
And exploring – like, when I go to a city, I don't look up like best places to eat. I just go randomly walk and let my just organically things happen. I might meet someone on the street and just talk. It might have already become quite clear. I like talking
to people. Yeah. Just not texting, or that's just me.
All right. So for example, a DHL delivery driver dropped something off the other day and he said, "What's in the box?" I said, "Oh, it's a bike." "Oh, my grandson rides bikes." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, da 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 da." It turns out I kind of know his grandson just through bikes. Obviously that's not because I know a lot of bike communities, but Brunswick Cycling Club. But I will talk to anyone on the street and I can find out more about them in 5 minutes than most their probably partners know about them.
And what do you think that is?
I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm curious. And you never know what you're going to learn from someone that you can take away and you're like, oh, that's really interesting. Maybe there's something in that, or maybe I might do that, or that's, you know, maybe I know someone else, or they'll steer me in a way like, oh, that's a really good advice. I'll check that out next time I go down Brunswick Street. Mm.
Is a smartphone curbing our curiosity?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you can't be curious if you're looking down.
Mm. You also have curiosity and fear, right? Like we're trying to protect ourselves or whatever. And then so the smartphone is the pacifier for the fear, right? So we're listening to – and so then we end up creating these loops where it's like when we're in a situation that we're – rather than actually being tapped in and looking and – making eye contact with people, if I can scrolling on.
Well, it's interesting because it's you say you're trying to remove fear, but think about how much fear is projected through portal, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's this loop that we're creating.
I was driving along the highway that runs along the ocean in California, and we pulled up. We were in this little town, and I pulled up next to this girl. And we had a Mustang convertible. She would have known that we're Australian from a mile away. Anyway,
got the rental.
Yeah, the rental. And we said, where's a great place? Where's a bar around here? Something like that. And she goes, oh, up here, my favorite place up there on the left. We went, it was so cool. This rooftop bar looking down to the ocean. You could see the surfers, the sun was going down. It's like doing that kind of shit, living and actually being curious to ask people.
Yeah.
Take someone's lead. You know, someone's experienced something before.
I think that's a trained skill, though. I don't know if you've listened to Malcolm Gladwell's 12 Rules for Life, but he talks about, because it's Jordan.
Jordan Peterson.
Peterson, yeah. Who developed the first one. Uh-huh. But he was saying other people have subsequently come up with their own, and he nitpicks from other people and said curiosity is a skill that, or is something that requires training. Mm. And every time you use an example of someone, say they go out for dinner, choose something from the menu that you would just not even wildly think. And sometimes it might be great, sometimes it might be not. And it's one of those things, is getting curious is one of those things that obviously I've trained to the point where I'm totally curious. And my daughter, oh my God, is like, hi. She just randomly shouts at people, hi, nice bike, da 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 da. She sees it in me. But it's one of those things that people say, oh, it comes so easily to you. It's because I've done it for so long. Yeah. And my job effectively was, as a bike courier, was meeting random people, delivering stuff to them. And then I would just strike up a conversation in elevators.
Do you remember the time that you were forcing it because it needed to be trained?
No. Yeah. It's always coming.
So can introverts be curious?
Absolutely. Yeah, they can.
Because I guess it's what you're describing is the action. I think that we all are curious. I feel like a lot of us are curious, but the fear overpowers the curiosity.
That is true.
So, for instance, it's like, oh, I'm curious about what that food is, but the fear of having a bad meal. Like if we remove the fear of, like, as you said, it's okay to have a shit meal sometimes, right? And the reward then is you'll try things that you never tried before. Mm. But it's definitely, I guess, a different posture to be in the world in that way.
It's true. And look, it's probably like someone saying to me, it's not that hard to be organized.
Yeah.
Organized August.
Yeah.
I think.
and I would say, speak for yourself. It's just one of the things that has come easier for me. Yeah. And it's one of those things that's once it's rewarded, it's momentum.
Yeah.
See, I'm curious about what that doorbell was before.
Yeah, was there
some kind of delivery that's come along?
Patisserie. Yeah.
You have a microphone, Mr. 97.
Yeah, it's they're like desserts.
Who sent these?
I have no idea. There's no
secret admirer.
Okay, well, bring them over. This is amazing.
This is exciting. I can't remember his name.
Oh, the soundo.
Yeah, there we are.
Alex.
Alex. Yeah, Alex. Oh, that was nice.
So amazing.
Nice. Yeah, he wants to say thank you. So, Alex.
Oh, what a legend. Awesome. Well, now we've got dessert
to
for
return
our
the microphones. So.
This is perfect.
Oh, yeah. He returned it?
Yeah, he brought the microphone back.
Oh, great.
Amazing. Oh, that was him at the door.
Yep. So he brought cannolis.
Oh, wow. Lovely. Oh, my God.
Oh, well,
this is the perfect
touch the side.
It's like he's.
How's that?
That's amazing. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex. You got us.
I don't even know you, Alex, but thank you.
You were talking about the being organized and lacking it. There's been my biggest struggle, I think, in life is, especially I started freelancing when I was 14, and I was I would always be up late, like up late, up early, because I was terrible with working with deadlines. I was always cramming and all that sort of thing. But I feel like it's one of those things where to be productive, to be happier. I'm happier when I'm organized, right? When I've got shit happening.
Okay. Yep.
This is the list. I've written 12 things that we're going to get organized with in August.
My wife loves lists. And look, it does help me. The days that she makes lists for me, I find that I'm so far more productive.
Yeah. It feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least you can look back on the day and go, oh, I did stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if you're not – like a list is just a form of measurement, right? And so you're seeing what can be capable. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just doing shit, not really – you can just reel a list off in your head.
Exactly. Well, a list is the same. You could align having a list with being an HP marketing manager, right? Like being
Don't
in
bring the, up that hell. Can I just say, look, one of the things that I learned in that corporate life, very brief window.
Yeah.
So there were – contractors, subcontractors, and actual employees. Mm-hmm. And it was the first, I mean, I wouldn't say first actual discrimination that I kind of felt, because they got perks and benefits and there was a real divide. Mm. And I could sense that in the company. I'm
Were
like,
you an employee or a contractor?
No, a contractor. God, yeah, sure. No. Because, yeah. And it wasn't a superiority thing, but although I would say that the employees probably felt slightly more superior to the
secure.
But and I'm wary of this in any dynamic. If you create an us and them, it's divisive and it just derides what can be better.
We can no longer be curious, I think, to your point as well, right? Mm. Like if it is the us and them, all of that stuff. But I know, like, having worked at tech companies, that happens within remote staff. Like, so when you have people who work remotely, there's a different culture there too if you're in the office, and so all of that. Mm. But I want to go through the list, the 12 things for the first 12 days. So yesterday was sort out your wallet.
Okay. What's your for the rest?
You get a wallet?
Right, so have you got a wallet?
I do have a wallet.
Well, so it's got to be quick and easy. So, like, for me,
here it is.
I'm organized. Like, I've organized them. Oh, look at yours.
It's a bike map. Oh, it's Manhattan.
It's Manhattan.
Is it legit? A legit bike map?
No, it's the subway map. Yep.
Oh, that's sick. So cool. Where did you get that from?
eBay.
Where all good things come from.
Exactly. It's just paper. It's Tyvek. So the first experience I had at Tyvek was for one of our manifests for Melbourne Bay. It's basically waterproof, highly durable paper, and it's super thin, super light. Look, all my primary credit cards are in my phone now.
I love that story. I love that, like, everything that you fucking have has a story.
Ah.
So the other things that we're doing. So today, what I'm doing tonight is no phone in bed. That's one thing I'm organizing. So I'm moving the charger from on the side
room.
Yeah, of the bed.
Good one.
So that's, have you, where do you keep your phone at night?
On my bed. Okay. But I don't, I try not to. I mean, I already look at my phone way too much, so it's,
But when you're in bed, you still scrolling?
No.
Oh, that's good.
I've had plenty.
Yeah.
And bed is for sleeping.
Yeah, sure. do you have a TV in your bedroom?
God, no.
Okay. We were discussing that the other day.
My TV, so with our new joint, the layout, they engineer the house, so the TV goes in the main area. And I just thought, I do not want the central shared space of the house where the TV to be the focus. Mm-mm. So it's not. It's like around the corner.
So what's in the focal point now?
I'm waiting to get like a mad piece of art, something. So there's this huge painting that my wife is of a deer that is by one of her friends who's an amazing artist, Andrew Salgado.
I feel like you really love deer. Is there a relationship with deer? Or?
There's not.
Do you think you wanted to import it? You wanted to allow deers in Australia and stuff? I don't know if there's some sort of deer agenda.
Just saying, deers were imported.
No, they were. So there were deer farms locally, and then they just released them all. And that's why it's the same with rabbits. And
why do you know so much about deer, though? Just
curious. So the first time I saw a deer in the gorge where I live and spend 90% of my time, I'm like, did I see a deer? No way.
Yeah.
And then I got curious, and then I was seeing them all the time. And now I can take you right now to a part of suburban Melbourne, and there will be a herd of stags, and they're just an amazing creature.
A deer killed someone the other day, though. Did you see that story in the news?
What, with?
In reports, a white man killed thousands of
people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but it's pretty crazy.
Anyway, let's reel this list off.
Drink 2 litres of water a day. How's your drinking? Do you drink water?
2 litres. Does it count if it's got coffee in it?
No. Well, it's a diuretic. Pissing butter. You need to fix that.
Yeah.
Update your passwords.
All the same?
No. You need to use like a password manager. Like, you should update them periodically. Periodically? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What else?
No.
Get a haircut and schedule the next. What do you like with that? You always shaving your hair. You do it every day?
Yeah.
Razor shave.
30 seconds.
In the bath.
Yep.
In the bath. She has a bath every morning.
Yeah. It's like super smooth.
Oh, mate, we're on next. We're moving places with our friendship.
Just added three more words to the message.
I couldn't grow hair. And even when I had hair, I was a ringer. So that.
Yeah. I loved it.
And I had short hair for a very long time. And then towards the end of my follicle days, I had a Hare Krishna hairdo. So I had all basically shaved on top. This is when I worked in New York.
Yeah.
And I had like the back was like the mullet starting from the top to the back.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I feel like you could have maybe. I feel like you would have scared me in the street.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's.
But he would have been saying, "Hey, mate, how are you? Yeah, what's your name?"
Being really
curious.
You
Australian too?
Yeah.
What else is there?
Donate blood.
Yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah. So that's on the list. If you were in England during was it
mad cow?
Yeah. You can't do it and all that sort of shit. Anyway, meditate for 10 minutes a day. Do you have you meditated ever?
No. No, I'm going to say no, but I do enjoy going for peaceful walks in the morning to start my day.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's listening to music and podcasts, does that count?
Probably not. And you're riding, you're doing some form of like, I mean, you wrote, how long did it take you to get here?
I drove into Prova Cycles, my mate Mark, in Fairfield. Then I rode the last 10 minutes. Yeah.
But I think it's meditative.
Yeah, you're bright.
I'm thinking about getting a bike trainer. What do you think about them?
Why?
I'm just curious.
What do I think about them?
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to hurt to tell people. It's like that thing of going to the gym to ride a bike inside.
Yeah.
Look, when I was half serious about going fast, mm-hmm. I had an indoor trainer.
Yeah. What about the trainer as my main? I'm worried about getting hit by.
I could not think of anything worse.
I'm worried about getting hit by a fucking car.
It's because you use your phone. You're looking down at your phone.
No, I'm not. I've got a quad.
And look, that's one of the great things about indoor training is you're removing the risk of and the weather and things like that. But actually listening, I don't know if you listen to Tony Robbins.
Yeah, a little bit. Recently, Conor McGregor and Mike Tyson have been on.
Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And he talked about getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and going running in the snow because he knew that whoever he's fighting wasn't going to do that.
Yeah.
He was willing to do sacrifice. And I haven't listened to any other podcast by Tony Robbins, but
I need to be willing to be hit by a car.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, in some ways, I've got to let go of it and be like, if it happened, it's.
No, honestly. Now, in this age, like I say, I worked for 10 years solidly all around the world riding a bike. Mm-hmm. It's very dangerous. Now, and I would consider myself pretty highly experienced in managing myself in traffic. Wouldn't do it now. It's mental. People are not looking.
You wouldn't what wouldn't you do now?
Ride, bike career.
Yeah,
bike career. Okay, sure.
And like, it's safer in the CBD because you have to kind of pay attention more in the CBD. Cars aren't moving as fast.
Mm.
About suburban roads, forget it.
On their phones and shit.
Do you clip in?
Bad.
Do you have like.
Yeah, I've got all that stuff. But I'd ride the bike paths. Bike paths.
I think bike paths is where it's at.
And we've got awesome bike paths in the city.
The next thing, fill water in windscreen wipers. Have you done that in your car lately?
Yep.
Okay. Update social media profile pics. What's your profile pic at the moment? Is it even a
view? Your brand, Fixo.
That's it.
Yeah.
Logo.
I can take a new profile
pic. You know
what?
I can tell you the last time I updated the logo, I changed it to pink for the Giro of last year's.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you probably need to update it maybe?
Why?
It's on the list.
It's a personal list. So
okay.
It's his list that he's doing.
No, but this is what everyone else is. This is what the community have organized.
Okay. Well, it's what you're doing and if people want to get involved.
Only a few more. Run 3 kilometers. Do you run at all?
I used to love running. I would love to get back into it, actually.
Well, let's organize.
Yeah,
let's
go for a run. We can hold hands.
Create an updated Spotify playlist. Are you into Spotify? Do you listen to Spotify?
I do listen to Spotify, not premium. But
okay.
Yeah.
You can still have playlists in.
Can
non-premium?
You?
No, that was a question, sorry.
Create them. I don't know if you could maybe create
them.
I
noticed on the desktop version, you can listen to albums chronologically, but in the phone version, it's like a random shuffle.
I had premium and then downgraded because I did a complete wipe of like a lot of expenses.
Because you were out of control,
I was.
Man.
But that was fucked.
Imagine like, how rich you could be.
You should still bring us the number now of your subscription, monthly subscription. Then it's like... If it's a big number, imagine what it would have been.
Well, I mean, but the thing is I ended up having to get I didn't have to. But premium Spotify, I feel like, is one of those things that's worth it. Because, like, it's a $20 out. Like, imagine what we used to spend on CDs.
And then your car gets broken into and they steal all your CDs.
Yeah. And so –
what's that, 11?
No, so it's 10. No, that was 11. You're right. Sort out undies drawer and buy new undies and socks.
I did that 2 weeks ago.
Buy all the same brand?
Do you do? Is it
more or less?
Is it because they're so tattered?
Look, I don't. Unlike you in your previous career, I don't walk around in my undies. But I like, and it's not. It's like one of those things. Like you got to wear just you take my pride wife, in your undies. Yeah, it's like your partner goes to great lengths to look amazing with their underwear, right? Yeah. It's a simple thing.
You sort your junk out.
Yeah, I mean, and it's nice, like nice undies, putting on nice
What's your
undies.
Brand of choice, Bonds? Or?
No, let's see, what are they? I don't know, they're just like
Ralph.
A,
no,
it's
Alpha.
Like a Target Alpha. Or
Alpha. Fuck, you are Alpha.
Yeah. One of my mates who has a big blog, I think he made some joke about my undies having Alpha on it.
Really? No, well, okay, that's because undies and socks I think is a big one. I did a big Happy Socks order like a few years ago, which lasted a while. But the problem is they don't look great with shorts, like long socks. Anyway, we're getting.
I like the Explorers. I like I'm warm feet is like my primary Explorers. Need.
Yeah, so merino warm?
And just work socks. You know, like you just. And
they're very thick, aren't they?
Yeah, I like thick socks. I like warm feet.
How often do you change your shoes? What shoes are you going
to? I got some. Come on. You should know the reference.
Jordans. Oh, yeah, Jordans. Yeah, Jordans.
They're sick.
They're cement threes, man.
I don't know anything about shoes. Oh, okay. Cement threes good?
Andy, thank you so much for coming on, mate.
Yeah, it's a pleasure talking shit.
It's now we get a
With
feast
some
on this.
Great company.
Yeah. We'd love to have you back on. But so Instagram is where I feel like I see most of your stuff. Is that where you're spending most of your time?
Yeah.
Yeah. FYXO.
Yeah.
On Instagram?
Someone asked me, does that stand for fuck you and then a kiss and a hug? I said, no, it is an abbreviation of the first brand name.
Oh, really? What was the first brand name?
Fixomatosis.
Oh, yeah. I see why you shortened it.
Is it is it relating to fixies? Is it relating to like fixie bikes?
Yes. So I wouldn't say bragging, but if you are riding or if you see someone in Australia riding a fixed gear, you can trace it back to me.
Really?
Yep.
Why?
Because I started it.
Was it not a thing? I mean,
it was definitely not a thing.
God, that's funny.
I used to go walk into bike shops and people would tell me I'm a fucking idiot.
What, because you were wanting a fix?
No, because I was riding them on the street before any – well, not before anyone because it's not a new thing.
What were people using them for? Like what was the
– No one was used – in Melbourne, there was two other people, old Ron – who is a bike courier, and
that's all he got for the nickname.
Alvaro. And Alvaro had a Repco conversion painted pink, and it was called The Bastard. and he was one of the most colourful characters in Melbourne, fantastic guy. And I'd come from London, and that's where I'd discovered track bikes, and no one in Australia. And so people would see me riding mine, like, oh, what's with the bike with one gear and no brakes? Well, I had a brake for a while, but then there was no brakes. And I just started sourcing. That's really the origin and the genesis of Fixo as a brand. I was just buying and selling track bikes.
Really?
So that buying everything in Australia, I rang up every bike shop in Victoria. Mm-hmm. And I said, you got any old track bikes? I'd make a list. And then I ran around Victoria and scooped them all up and I sold them to people all around the world.
Can you break a fixed?
And that phone bill was fucked up.
Well, back then,
I did it on my mobile.
Well, the can you break? Like, can you?
You
go
can
in the
stop.
Back?
You can. Yeah, you can slow down.
People are putting their foot in the tire. No.
There wasn't. No, there was top. On the top. There was a Ted Shred. It's there was a DJ in San Fran called Ted Shred who used to break like Barney Rubble style. Yeah. But actually, I saw a guy today on a really pimped out track bike, and I looked at him like, that's fucking dangerous.
Yeah. Because it could go fast, but can't
stop.
No,
it's just it's a highly skilled version of riding a bicycle with very little margin for error. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing it day in, day out, I could do it without thinking.
Right.
And I was really good at it. But bike couriers who do ride their bike day in, day out get really good at it and you don't have to think about it. But then it was marketed to people who aren't real cyclists as a fashionable thing.
It's dangerous being a hipster.
It is very dangerous being a hipster. You can watch your wallet, man. I'll take it.
It's the Daily Talk Show. Andy, thanks for coming on. Mate,
pleasure.
We'd love to get you back on. I feel like there's probably hours and hours of stories. More? Yeah, we can fucking get you on for a weekend. Yeah. That'd be good. It's the Daily Talk Show. We'll see you tomorrow when Mr. 97 will have bleached hair. Which we're very excited about. So this is the last time we'll see you with cute little brown curls. Yeah. It's been great.
He's so cute.
Isn't he?
Ride safe.
See you guys.
See you guys.